for you is a word.
Tell it.
It'll open the right doors, some of the wrong ones too.
Don't try to understand it. Feel it.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeat Game, sponsored by Keeps. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look on a podcast and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what is going on? Oh, look at your handle there. Mine just says passionate guest because I didn't assign myself anything. Sonny's is his email. And yours, what does yours say?
What does it say there?
It looks like it says Nolan is overrated. Oh my goodness. It's going to be one of those episodes. Sonny looks so excited to get into this right now. Look at his face. He can't wait to talk about this.
Will this be longer than our Rogue One episode, which I think is our longest ever show?
Don't forget, we did a two-parter, I think, on the Avengers, didn't we?
No, that was a pretend two-parter.
Remember, we did two-parter?
We pretended, we broke in the middle of it. We're like, that's the show.
Oh, okay. I thought we did one where we did two of the devoted two episodes to one movie.
No, we definitely did two episodes to something. Yeah. Maybe it was the last.
I think it was Rogue One. I think we did Rogue One and Rogue One Redux.
Maybe that was it. That was very early on in the show. That was.
Yeah, the point is, we're not doing two episodes on Tenet. We're going to do a single 3-hour episode on Tenet.
I mean,
this
I don't.
Great. If you're going, I don't from know Waco to what did I say? People love talking about
El Paso,
Galveston.
Oh, no, I don't think there are 3 hours worth of ways we can say what happened in this scene.
Okay.
I don't know what all happened.
Right.
To
I
that
don't know,
scene.
But I
we should say spoilers.
Yeah. Okay. Spoilers. From the
no.
Before we get
no,
into
this movie
it,
is unspoilable.
That's true.
This movie is unspoilable.
Okay. Before we get into the main event, JVL, what else is going on? Anything you want to talk about?
Here's what. This is synecdoche for the entire thing. Mm. As I was in the theater for the first time since I went to see Christopher Nolan's 10th anniversary Inception, I had something which has never happened to me before, which is that a large moth was flying around and casting shadows on the screen and then making its way to the light, to the light.
It was really...
And it kept going towards closer and closer and closer to the projector. And it must have flown into the projection booth because it finally disappeared after like 90 seconds. But if it hadn't gone away, I was close to
walking
like,
out.
Yeah. Go find a manager and saying, I'm sorry, you've got a 4-inch wide insect that's casting an 8-foot shadow on the fucking screen.
Right. Because I was going to say, clearly the moth is heading towards the projector because as it gets larger and larger until it reaches its bliss. You know,
I thought you only got that at drive-thrus.
Yeah.
Drive-thrus, drive-ins.
That's the great Norm MacDonald. That's the great Norm MacDonald joke, isn't it? But the moth goes to the shrink.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you mean Sonny's friend? Sonny Bunch's buddy.
Sonny's buddy.
I wouldn't say that was really the Norm MacDonald joke about a movie theater. I mean, there's a joke that Norm MacDonald tells that involves a moth.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
So that's all I've got. Okay. Boys, how are you?
Wow. Sonny, what's going on?
Not much. JVL, you had mentioned wanting to talk about Novak Djokovic a little bit before the show, and I am curious to get your take on this. Because I saw what happened to Jocko. He gets kicked out of the U.S. Open, which is going on, apparently.
Raise your hand if you knew the U.S. Open was happening.
Who knew?
Only from your text.
Well, isn't there... So I want to come back to this in a second. I want to circle back to this. But I see like a 30-second clip of this happen on Twitter over and over again, because that's where I see everything now, because I live in the panopticon of social media, and it is driving me slowly insane, driving me very, very quickly insane, actually. But what I see happen is Djokovic hitting a ball back to the rear of the court, as they often do. We like hitting balls to ball boys or whatever.
Sure.
Except he hit this one a little sharper than he normally might have, and it hit a lineswoman right in the throat.
Ooh.
And she collapsed to the ground, and she's like holding her throat, And you can see Djokovic.
As if Liam Neeson had hit her in Taken.
Right. Yeah. Right, I mean, right, Leo DiCaprio running, doing headshots.
I'll tell you what it's like in Saving Private Ryan. The guy next to Mellish, he gets it in the throat just like that.
Yeah. So the and you see on Jocko's face him go through the stages of grief in about 15 seconds as he realizes what he has done accidentally and what it will cost him, which is an exit from the tournament.
Implications.
Because, well, not just an exit from the tournament, it will cost him a major because he was going to win this tournament.
Well, he was going to win this tournament because a lot of people were boycotting the tournament, right? So explain to me, A,
players, you mean a lot
this,
of players also, were boycotting?
And also, B,
yeah, a
what
lot
is,
of players didn't show up.
What is going on with the actual tournament?
So a lot of players did not show up. Neither Nadal nor Federer were in the field. And the players who have shown up, if you've watched it, mostly not at their sharpest. A lot of people, you know, the COVID-19, actually, this is a thing which it really has, as somebody who has put on a lot of weight over the course of this pandemic, seeing that even professional tennis players have gotten doughy during the pandemic.
Stand up. I can't tell.
Let's very happy.
Stand up and turn around. Let's get a look here.
I'm not going to dance for you.
Dance. Clap your hands.
Do a little twirl. I just want to see you turn around.
So I would say on both the men's and women's tour, it is clear that a lot of people have stress eaten their way through the pandemic just like us. I found that wonderful.
Have there been other tournaments up until now? Have they been playing like Wimbledon? Was Wimbledon played? Or
no. They played the Australian. No Wimbledon. Oh, no,
that's
French.
Right. There was that story about how Wimbledon actually had a policy, had an insurance policy covering pandemics. It was like the only major sporting event.
Of course,
Lloyd's of London.
They paid like $1 million a year for the last 10 years and like it didn't pay out. Man. And then this year it pays out like $60 million or something.
Amazing. It's like betting don't pass, isn't it?
Right. It is. One day you'll do it.
Djokovic is here and he's cruising
to
a major, which would... What he's really thinking about is, I want to be mentioned, because the only thing he's playing for anymore is, I want to be mentioned as the possible GOAT. I want there to be some idiots on Bleacher Report or whatever the fancy tennis website is 10 years from now, who in order to pick a fight online, start going, actually, Novak Djokovic is better than Federer or Nadal.
He needs to add
a couple more majors in order to do that. And this was a freebie.
You know what? There would have been an asterisk next to his name, though, because it was like played during pandemic, you know? But when you talk about players being doughy...
Nobody remembers the asterisks.
Right, that's right. Was Djokovic in that same category, or was he fit as ever?
With him, it's hard to tell. He looked fit. He was not playing as sharply, but he just, you know.
So there must have been
head and shoulders above the field.
Even though is this happening at the Arthur Ashe Stadium?
Yes.
Okay.
So
there's no gasps because there's nobody there, or is it like a minimum capacity thing?
No, nobody there. Nope. You know who's there? When you watch now, it's full of like USTA bigwigs. So anybody in the USTA who's a VIP has got themselves a seat somewhere. And evidently, it's so bad that the seeds were given the luxury suites. Because there's nobody there. And so they just told the seeds, hey, while you're here all day, if you
could stay,
give you your own luxury suite to hang out in all day.
If you went there, JVL, if you went, they'd let you in the tent. There's always the VIP tent.
No. Yeah. Anyway, so Jocko gets tossed. And what are your feelings about this, gentlemen?
I remembered when I saw it happen, I thought back to something that happened during one of Brett Favre's last seasons with the Packers. There was a moment in a game. I think it may have been a playoff game, but I can't remember for sure. Somebody will correct me on this after the fact. But he the play was blown dead. He still had the ball in his hand, and he kind of tossed it just forward, and it hit one of the referees right in the head. Just clocked the referee in the head, who like turned around. He's throwing his flags all over the place. And Brett Favre's, the look on Brett Favre's face is like when you see a child who has been caught, like putting his hand in the cookie jar. It was like, but like not like that exactly, because he had clearly done it accidentally. He wasn't like, it wasn't a Brett Favre like rifle throw at the guy's head.
It wasn't even a passive aggressive attempt, he was just
lobbying it, you know, down the field. And the face was literally something like I can't describe it perfectly, but that's what I thought of when I saw Djokovic do this. And
it unintentional.
And it struck me as obviously accidental. Mm-hmm. It did not seem malicious. I don't know what had been happening in the match up to that point. I don't know if he had been arguing with the line judge or whatever. It just like, it was a thing that happened. I was like, oh, that sucks for him, because he clearly didn't intend to do this. At the same time, you got to be careful. You got to be careful when you're just throwing balls back there. Like, that's, I mean, I, you know, I, if it had happened to a ball boy, I would have felt bad too, you know, but mm-hmm. it happened to a line judge. That's even worse. Because line judges are people, unlike ball boys. So anyway, I felt bad, but he had to be tossed out. I mean, that's the rule. The rules are
so,
the rule.
So is Wimbledon over? Is there a winner? And is it Chris Lewis? He finally won. Chris Lewis finally won.
Is this a reference to the movie Wimbledon?
No. That's, remember that, JVL? Remember Chris Lewis?
I don't. I have no idea what you're talking
about. It was like a freak Wimbledon. Somebody's going to defend Chris Lewis on this, but it was a freak Wimbledon 1 year where Chris Lewis, who was like an unseeded guy, managed to make his way all the way to the finals. And I think he faced Macron that just got crushed.
Oh,
everyone, it was like one of these things where the other side of the bracket had all sorts of weird things happening. And when that happens and all these people face each other and then there's a number of upsets, every now and then there's an opportunity for some weirdness like that.
Like 16 seed to get through.
Yeah,
I remember Victorino, a US Open from our youth. Mm-hmm. So we would have been middle school or high school. Mm-hmm. When I want to say his name was Jay Berger.
Oh, sure. Jay Berger.
Lucked his way into the semis. And he, was a guy who served with his racket behind his back.
He doesn't do the butterfly, as I call
it.
He can't do the butterfly. It was already back there. Defied, in my opinion.
The last player to make a major semifinal, at least men's player, mm-hmm. with an aluminum racket.
Oh. Well, it goes to show you.
There.
It goes to show you, you know?
I believe all about... he played with a Prince Classic, which is the green throat.
Really, because I used a Thunder Stick, and I didn't get as far with my Thunder, with my Prince Thunder Stick.
Aluminum as opposed to graphite?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I could picture it, too. But also, what was crazy about Jay Berger's serve is that people are fast-forwarding. They had no idea they were getting 10 minutes of tennis here.
Tennis talk!
This is about tennis, not tennis, but tennis.
Tennis it.
I don't understand how he could get a serve that speed when he doesn't go through the momentum, the wind-up, and then hitting the serve. You know what I mean? Because it's back there. It's just like, you know, I don't...
Do you understand how kinesiology works? Like, no. The act of moving it back doesn't actually generate any force. Only moving forward generates
Why
force.
Do you move it back, then?
I think probably to, I don't know why.
One thing you do.
Sonny, you're the one here who is the best of us at tennis.
So, I mean, I feel like it is very much like underhand free throw throwing, that one reason nobody does it is because it looks really, dumb. It looks, well, it looks,
you're saying is, there's always some guy who says, dumb. Oh yeah, but actually, because of the way the arcs and the hoop
if Shaq did underhand lobs from his groin to the basket, it would be better than whatever. He's not going to do that because he doesn't want to look like an idiot. And that is one good reason not to serve that way. But there is a function of momentum, right? Where if you rock back, you come forward, you hit it, and that has you going toward the net.
That's right.
If you're a serve and volleyer,
great,
you know,
sort of motion thing. Okay.
What is your overall takeaway on Djokovic?
I feel bad for him. I hate him. So I'm happy to see I should be happy to see Victorino. What do I always say to you? In fact, what did I say to you over text? Just recently, when you sent me, you shared me the news story about your classmate who has been sent to federal pound me in the ass.
No. He's been arrested. There's no trial. I'm sure he'll get another friend of mine. I was on Facebook with my buddy Shane and another guy, and we were talking about what's going to happen. And he figures it's going to be what do you call it? Club Fed.
Club
maybe
Fed.
Maybe 3 years.
As the lawyer says.
Okay, everyone's confused here. Yeah, yeah, that's right. There is no
the lawyer says in the office.
Oh, no. Okay, so you're, before we get to my part, go to your part first, which is you were finishing your thought on Jocko. You felt bad for him. You don't like him,
him.
But at the end of it, you always say time.
If you wait long enough, eventually you will get to sample life's greatest delicacy, which is watching bad things happen to bad people. There.
You know,
put it in a fortune cookie.
Yeah, no, you're that's like the same mindset as Jack Nicholson in As Good As It Gets. Remember what he says? When he says, you know, what pisses us off is that isn't that we've had it so bad, but that they've had it so good. You know, it's easy to say that.
Right.
Okay. So, yes. So as Jonathan was alluding to, a classmate of mine who I never really liked. I guess I could say his name. It's all on the
record. No, don't do that.
He was recently arrested for
petty theft because he stole somebody's bicycle.
Right? Yeah, that's what it is. And
he works in finance.
Wait, it's a hedge fund, and he got arrested for fraud.
By God! That's Bernie! Bernie Last has just walked into the room.
That's right. And extortion is one of the charges, according to Bloomberg, when I was just reading. And so it had to do with putting pressure. You know, and he's, well, you know, I mean, he broke his fiduciary. The fiduciary trust responsibility. But this is somebody I never really liked. And it wasn't because he was mean. People have reasons, whatever. But you know me, I like everybody. I walk down the hall at New South. I love everybody, you know. But these are people. These are certain people. They would look through you. You know what I'm saying? They look like you're not there. You don't
like
exist.
You're a ball boy.
Yeah. Non-existent, Sonny. That's right. Non-existent. You're there to serve them. So that was. That was a good start.
Victorino. I'm sorry. I gotta. Just for the people what? Listening to this, in order for this guy to have you not like him, he must have been the biggest jagoff in the tri-state area.
Yeah, because you know me, I like everybody.
You like everybody.
And it's because
don't be like, well, I don't really know why I like it. No. You must have had a reason, and he must be a terrible
human being. Because he did not acknowledge your existence. If you're walking down the hall, you could say, hey, how are you? He would pretend that he didn't hear you. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry, this is a guy from high school.
College.
Oh, this is a guy from college.
Yeah.
The Void.
Yeah, he called it the void. It was this because I was on one part of the hall and my other friend Peter and Brian Potts were on the other. And there's a stretch of all these basically rugby type guys. And this is like they're in their own world, you know, Phillips Academy, whatever. You know.
Exeter,
Pingree, Hotchkiss. I'm just throwing it all in there. okay. Anyway, no offense. Choate Rosemary Hall. No offense to our prep school listeners. Anyway, that was my experience. And then the other thing I was going to say is I'm trying to cut back on booze because that might be a weight factor in my. I gained some weight in the last 4 or 5 days, and Kate thinks it's because I was drinking for 4 or 5 days. And I said, that can't possibly be true. So I started charting, and it was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It was actually 6 days. And so I had to stop and I said, well, let's go back and see if this is, you know, her crazy conspiracy theory is true. And I had a little bit of red wine on Wednesday, not a big deal, just with dinner. On Thursday, I had a couple martinis. I had to pick up some hot dogs from a friend of ours because we go to the same butcher, but we have to order X amount to get the free shipping. And so I went over to our friend Andy's house and then, of course, picked up the hot dogs and then I had 2 martinis. So then after that,
then you drove home.
Then I, you know, it's not far. And then the next day, had a gin and tonic, white sangria and white wine, but it's all very light stuff. It's all very light stuff for a dinner. And then I had beer and bourbon at Captain Bill Dwyer's and then went to the neighbors at their fire pit in the backyard. Everyone was very good about distance and I had grappa, mezcal and tequila. And then I you know, saw the Knights on the following Monday and had a little bit of Woodford Reserve. So I think, okay, I stopped and I didn't drink until today. 3 days later. No, 4 days. 3 days. Oh, today's Thursday.
Sorry.
Well, since you took so 3 days off, that means you can drink for the next 18 days straight.
I just had beer. It was not a big deal. But I did want to give a shout out, and I forget our listener friend who was it Robert Little? I can't remember who it was who gave us the tequila, because that's what I had on Sunday night. That was the Classe Azul in that beautiful ceramic container. That was the one that makes the bell noise. And I have to tell you, it was delicious. And it's not like tequila that you're... I don't like tequila. I don't drink tequila. It's gross, the smell. This was actually quite pleasant, enjoyable, sippable, and I had more of it. Sonny, were you a tequila guy in college? Did you ever get drunk on tequila?
I have been drunk on everything.
Yes.
Including tequila. That's but I have never, I've never liked tequila. It tastes like dirt.
Yeah, this was...
I mean, it tastes literally like the earth. I don't care for it.
This was completely eye-opening. My problem, you know what my problem is with tequila is there's a delayed reaction to the... you're feeling the buzz from it. And so it's like, for me at least, it's like 15 minutes of like, oh, I don't feel anything. I'll have another one. Oh, gee, everything's fine. Unlike certain other drinks. And then like 30 minutes later, it hits you like a freight train. And the problem is by then you already had 4 or 5 drinks and you cannot go back in time to stop it from happening.
That is A+.
Boy, that whole thing is exhausting. Plus. So exhausting.
21 also, minutes.
You know what else? Minutes. You know when you have a lot of tequila, it feels like everyone's moving forward, but you're moving backwards. Okay, speaking of which, over the weekend, Tenet took in a whopping $20.2 million. Followed by The New Mutants with $3 million, and in third place, Unhinged with $1.8 million. Good for Unhinged. What a dark, crazy movie that was. And it still haunts me. the part where he throws the girl against the knife.
That was great scene. That was great scene. Great kill.
Box office thoughts.
I have a box office thought.
Go for it.
AVL.
The pandemic has saved Christopher Nolan's career because this environment has given Tenet a total pass, and had it opened in normal times, it would have had a solid opening weekend and it would have dropped by 70% from week 1 to 2.
It's entirely possible. It's entirely possible.
Agree or disagree, Sonny?
Its cinema score would have been a C.
It was a B, so which is not good.
No, well, but it was a B with a self-selected group of Nolan fanboys like us,
right?
Going out to the theaters. If this had been a $65 million opening with the type of people that entails, the cinema score would have been a C.
Yeah. So I have a lot of box office thoughts, and I go into this at length in my newsletter that will be coming out Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. So everyone
should... Newsletter for what website?
My newsletter for The Bulwark. It's called Screen Time. There's a link in my Twitter bio that you can click on and sign up for it there. I have three main thoughts. The first is that if Warner Brothers really wanted to, they could talk themselves into this being a win. You could look at the per screen average and say, look, it made $7,200 per screen opening in mostly in markets where the ticket prices are lower than in New York and LA. And that $7,200 per screen average is a little more than half of what Interstellar and Dunkirk made on their opening weekend per screen averages, right? Their Interstellar and Dunkirk opened at like 13,300. This opened at 7,200. So if you consider that the theaters are operating at 30 to 50% capacity, really, it's like a 14,400 opening, right? So in theory, if you do a lot of convoluted cinema math,
extrapolating,
you could talk yourself into this not being a disaster. The second thing that is interesting about this is that it is, again, this is the second thing that Warners could kind of like hang their hat on and say, look, it's not terrible. In the middle of the pandemic, in the worst environment for going to see movies, literally in 100 years, the movie had the third best Labor Day weekend opening of all time. Third best Labor Day weekend. Opening of all time. Labor Day. great weekend That's for it. Movies, as historically, as everyone knows. I'm joking. It's a terrible, terrible weekend for movies. And the last thing kind of related to that is that it had the best opening on IMAX screens for any Labor Day movie ever. Okay. So like you could like pick and choose little things and you could say, okay, well, you know, in theory, this isn't a disaster, but it all comes back to this movie grossing $20.2 million domestically on a 200 some million dollar budget before prints and advertising and publicity. And, you know, that's not good. It's not good. It's not good. And if it does, and the thing that Warner's has to be terrified of is that this was a super front loaded audience. That that people were so desperate to get out to the theaters that, you know, the drop off, even with, you know, potentially bad word of mouth, the drop off will be in the like 80% range, which could happen.
Wow.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. This is the thing, is we are in totally unprecedented, right, uncharted waters, and I have no idea what's going to happen in terms of box office.
Here's a question, Sonny.
Yeah.
Knowing what we know now, do you think that they could have made as much or more money going premium VOD? You get to keep a bigger part of the pie.
They certainly could have made more than $20 million. That is like,
right.
I'm saying
whatever our final theatrical run is so here in the States.
I don't know. I mean, there are other things to consider beyond pure dollars and cents, which is that, you know, Warner Brothers has tried to position itself as like the house that auteurism built and maintained, right? This is why they gave Denis Villeneuve, you know, $200 million to go make a Dune movie after Blade Runner 2049 lost everyone their shirts. It is why they give Christopher Nolan enormous amounts of money to essentially do whatever he wants to do. So when Christopher Nolan says, "I do not want this movie to be on VOD," that plays a big, I mean, again, it like, could they have made more money releasing this on premium VOD than they will domestically in the United States? Probably. I think that's
bootstrapping it to HBO Max.
Possibly. I don't know.
Concentration Camp Mulan has done very well, right?
I haven't seen number one. I haven't seen a single figure on downloads or anything.
It's not very good.
Well, I won't see it. I won't see it because I'm not going to pay $30 for it. I already paid $12 a month or whatever.
We paid $30 for it, and my kids were basically done after 40 minutes.
Yeah. Did you see the credits that we thank the Xinjiang province security for?
No.
I
didn't act that there either.
So anyway, my box office thoughts are that this is not a great box office.
JVL, do you have other box office thoughts?
Well, you know, again, if you wait long enough, you get to see bad things happen to bad movies.
No, but not bad people. I don't think he's a bad person. I think that, well, okay, we'll get to
Victorino,
that.
Victorino, tell me. What are your thoughts?
Well, I know a lot of the biggest complaint everybody has is that they didn't understand it, right? And that was J-Pod, his review. It was all about that. But the good news is here on the Subbeacon, we actually have someone here who has seen this movie and has all the answers.
Oh, who is it?
Guess who's back? Gene! Tenet is a timeless thriller. A man goes back in time to stop a Russian villain from blowing up the world, and in the process realizes he has a twin brother. And so does the Russian villain. And so does Elizabeth Debicki in a towering performance. This is the best time travel movie since Freaky Friday. I give it 3 stars, even though there were technical glitches at my screening, and some of the images were going backwards. Someone wake the projectionist. Tenet stars Michael Caine.
Bye, Gene.
Thank you, Gene. I hope you had a fine N95 respirator to protect you in the theater.
Not with that mustache. Things are getting through. I mean, really.
Sonny, would you like to do a big boy review of this, Sonny?
Yeah. Sure. Tenet, starring John David Washington and Robert Pattinson as secret agents who are trying to stop a guy who has been tasked with people from the future to end time and make it go backwards. They stop him. We don't all die. No, Tenet is a big budget, very fun movie to go see on the big screen, assuming you don't care about little things like understanding what is happening in the movie. I really, really enjoyed the opening set piece. I just like sat there kind of smiling, this like goonish smile under my face underneath my mask as I watched the big kind of Nolan-y swooping motion, sweeping right action right set piece take place. And then the plot starts. And this is a good comparison for this movie is the movie Primer. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Primer, which is a like hard sci-fi time travel movie that is all about like, well, if you go back in time, but then if you keep going back in time, then if it changes this, then it does the blah, blah. This has a lot of kind of primary elements to it. And the thing is, I hate Primer. I hate Primer because it thinks it's smarter than it is. And by all rights, I should really, really hate Tenet 2, because it is a movie that is very aggressively tinkering with itself in ways that are designed merely to confuse the audience. But I didn't hate it, and I didn't hate it because it is such a ridiculous enterprise. It is so ridiculous and over the top and taken and the province of a director who is so like taken with himself and his abilities to manifest his vision on screen that I couldn't help but being impressed by it. The big concern here is time, of course, and time is something that Christopher Nolan has long been obsessed, fascinated by in his films. And his problem, I think, is that he tries to literalize time on the big screen. So this is why you get in Interstellar, you get an actual infinite library where he can kind of travel from part of the library to part of the library. And it is an attempt to kind of literalize the passage through time in a four-dimensional space. In this movie, you have people going backwards and forwards on the screen at the same time, themselves going backwards and forwards on the screen at the same time. You have what is called in the film a temporal pincer movement, which involves people coming backward through time and forward through time at the same time to attack the same point. And it looks kind of cool. It's also totally incomprehensible. I mean, this is the whole final action set piece is completely incomprehensible just from the dialogue to the masks everyone is wearing to kind of obscure who they are to the actual movement on the screen. It just is like, it's impossible to follow. It's a big swing, probably kind of a miss. But I'm going to go see it like 10 more times in the theaters because there's nothing else. There's nothing else to go see.
Anybody else there either. You'll have the whole theater to yourself.
And I really want to understand it. And I have a theory about the end of the film that we can discuss in a moment that may or may not be total fan fiction on my part. But I'm curious to bounce it off you guys and see what you think. Anyway, JVL, how much did you hate this movie?
Were you hopeful, JVL? That's what I want to know. Were you hopeful? Did you want to like this movie? We all talked about this movie. Was it like Phantom Menace? I really want to love this movie, and then you left it like, yeah, it was good.
So, I will say to answer your question, Victorino, I was very, very hopeful, and then I read Sonny's review in Screen Time, his newsletter, and Sonny, who is the president and chairman of the Christopher Nolan fan club.
Yes, yes.
His review was so kid glove that I told myself, wow, this movie must be terrible. And so I winched all of my expectations way down.
Yeah.
And even so, Victorino, can you tell me about the quadrants?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Hold on one second.
And tell me about your quadrants, and then we're going to have a little Socratic dialogue about the film.
First of all, plot, F. I'll put it to you this way. It's no Green Book, okay? It's no Green Book. Duration, F, 2.5 hours is a lot. Violence, action, I gave it an A+. I thought that was exciting. I liked the shooting. Was a lot of good stuff there. The fight scenes were great. Sex and nudity gets the NA, right? It's not applicable, and there is none. But I do like Elizabeth Debicki, and this is what's really interesting. She must be so beautiful because I am drawn to her, and I am not drawn to giant women. Like, you know, I mean, she is, how tall is she? What did they say? Somebody said 6'4"?
She's 6'2 or 6'3.
Yes, enormous. And that's usually not my type. If you had to choose between being a giant woman or like either freakishly tall or freakishly short, I would say freakishly short.
Okay.
You know, reverses. If you were a man,
we're getting some insights. Getting some insights into Vic here.
Anyway, no one can see what I'm doing with my hand right here. You can see the motion I'm doing with my hand. Okay, versus if you were a man, if you had a choice to be freakishly tall or freakishly short, I think we would all say freakishly tall. At least you could play basketball, you know? It was very hard to be a very, very small man. Anyway, I find it quite remarkable, but she has that sort of presence. She's wonderful. And nevertheless, so the overall thing is a C. It gets a C. So that to answer your question about the quadrants, it did not do well in most of the quadrants.
Victorino?
Yes.
What is the name of the main character in this movie?
I had problems. Are you ready for this? I had problems coming up with the actor's name.
And Victorino?
It was John David Washington. I was thinking Isaac is in there somewhere.
Say his name at the end. It's protagonist.
Denzel Washington.
He's literally just protagonist.
Oscar Isaac. The protagonist. Right. Okay. The protagonist.
Victorino, how does entropy reversal work?
I don't know. As soon as I heard entropy, I said, oh, that's it. I'm done.
What is a free port?
I don't remember entropy. What?
What is a free port?
Oh, yes. They're floating where you could put all your art into these floating warehouses that don't pay tax.
Those are real. Those are things that are real. Those exist in the real world, our world.
I see some. I can't tell if he's being serious.
100% real.
Okay. I've been to Freeport in the Bahamas. You do not want to go there. Go ahead.
Who built the entropy machines?
Ah, yes. A female scientist who is like the future female Robert Oppenheimer. And rather than kill herself, this is good. I promise our listeners, we did not rehearse any of this. This is all on the spot and I'm impressing myself. And rather than kill herself, she decides that she wants to send back what she created in pieces, like Horcruxes.
In the final climactic battle scene in the third act, who are they fighting against?
Kenneth Branagh.
There's an army. There's an army of people Russian running around.
Gangster.
Who are those people?
They're Kenneth Branagh's gangster army.
Okay. So my belief is that every single one of your answers has been incorrect. But on the other hand, I'm not sure myself because I have no fucking idea what happened in this movie. Okay.
Can I ask my questions?
Please.
Okay. Actually, this is the big one, okay? First of all, am I the only one? Let me just say this. I thought I had the movie until that happened. I can't believe I'm understanding it. Like, I think I get it. I know what's happening. I was very excited.
You're like Will Ferrell in Old School at the very end when the debate club. He beats James Carville and then he snaps. What happened? Where am I?
I'm following along. Okay, I get it. I appreciated that they did not do any cheats. obviously to a fault. There were no technological devices the way, I know, let me explain what I mean by this. Like, so no, I know you're looking, not easy technological cheats. Like, remember what does Rob Lowe say in Thank You for Smoking? Oh, you know, for the smoking in space. Oh, we just need the, who's a whatchamagig? What does he call it? Is that what he calls it? Right. And that takes care of that problem. So there's no weird device that'll say, oh, and we can do this. That said, I'm following along. I'm not getting all the dialogue. And I'm like, well, it's loud. It's very, very loud in the IMAX laser theater. And then I lose it. I'll tell you when I lost it. The convoy heist scene, the car chase, a lot of trucks. Very exciting. I said, this is really impressive. As was the 747, because as we all know, it's all real. And the protagonist chucks the orange briefcase out the window, and I have no idea where it goes. For a brief moment, I thought his other self caught it, and then I thought Kenneth Branagh caught it. And so that had me wondering for the rest of the scene what happened to the briefcase. That's the first thing. And then they get to the room for the interrogation, and Kenneth Branagh shoots Elizabeth Debicki. But then on the other side of the glass is Kenneth Branagh. Am I the only one who thought maybe he had a twin like this is The Prestige, which is also a Nolan movie? I said, you know what? I was kind of hoping that was the answer, because then problem solved. If it was, oh, thank God he has a twin, problem solved. Now I can understand this movie, right? But of course, I swear, I only thought that for about 2 seconds. Thank you. Oh, thank you, JVL. I thought of it just, and then I realized, oh, he's seeing his former self. Oh, no. And then that's when the whole thing unraveled for me.
But he's seeing his future self. Going backwards in time.
The future self, then he's looking at his former self.
We're in the present, and he's watching his future self, who was going backwards through time.
This revolving.
And there's the walkie talkies where they're talking backwards.
How does that work?
The movie's coherence failed for me at two specific and discrete points. And the first of them was that not the first part of the highway chase, but the second part of the highway chase, where John David Washington is going backwards through entropy, right? And then again during that huge last set piece where Robert Pattinson's character is going in and out of the turnstile, so he's going forward, then he's going backward, then he's going forwards again, and then it just, on top of like just not really being able to track what the people are doing, who's going forwards and who is going backwards, it is on first watch, it is not coherent. It is not a cinematic thing that you can watch and piece together on first viewing.
I want you to hold your thought, JVL. I just want to say, trying to understand this movie had me pulling my hair out. Speaking of which, did you know 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35? The best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have hair left. You used to have to go to the doctor's office for your hair loss prescription. Now, thanks to Keeps, you could visit a doctor online and get your hair loss medication delivered right to your home. They make it easy and deliver your medication every 3 months, so you can say goodbye to pharmacy checkout lines and awkward doctor visits. Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. You may have tried them before, but probably not for this price. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and more than 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. Keeps treatments start at just $10 a month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month for free. So, if you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/subbeacon to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/subbeacon. Sonny and JVL, I will have one more question, and then I'm going to sit back and you guys have at it, okay? So I'm just going to throw this out there. The other problem, the big problem I had with the movie, where I was like, okay, I'm willing to say I didn't get it, story of my life with most movies, but at which point I said, wait a minute, I really am now bothered by it. And it's when Elizabeth Debicki goes back in time to Vietnam. Why isn't she wearing an oxygen mask and the Indian guy on the boat?
Oh.
Don't you have to?
Oh.
That bothered me. And yeah, that's my question.
I have a serious question for you though, Victorino.
That was a very serious question, but go ahead.
If Jacob. Elizabeth Debicki had been topless in this movie, would it have been an A- for you?
Oh, you mean would have had shot the whole thing up to
would topless Elizabeth Debicki shoot the entire Enterprise now, with its other three apps?
It wouldn't have, because
remember Widows?
Yeah. What about Widows?
Oh, that's right. She is naked in Widows, isn't she?
I forgot she was.
I guess that's right.
How did they?
And that movie was at best a C for Vic. It may have been a D.
I did not like that movie. Okay, go ahead.
So here is, I was viscerally angry with the movie. Actually, first I was shocked. Before that, I was just in denial. I sat in the theater just literally the entire runtime, even before the first Ukraine concert hall sequence was finished, because within that there were problems that I did not understand. And so I was just, I can't believe this is happening. How is this happening? And the movie finished and I walked out of the theater and I drove to a Taco Bell drive-in on my way home. I have not been to a Taco Bell in 20 years. And I
drive-through. I thought you went to see a movie.
Drive-through. No. And I ordered like one of everything. Nice. I spent $17 at Taco Bell.
Just for you?
For me. Just 70, because I was just like, give me one of the
tacos.
I'll take a chalupa. Because I didn't know what I wanted. I couldn't. And I just came home and I just sat and ate. And then I got angry that I'd gone to see this fucking movie and put myself at risk of the Rona, when we could have just done the Man with the Iron Fists or the Alexandra Daddario as a Lonely Hooker in Japan movie. You know, we could have done any other good movie instead of this.
MTV documentary coming up.
What really drove me crazy is that Tenet fails both as an exercise in storytelling, which is more forgivable, right? If you're just super ambitious, you can fail at the storytelling, but it even fails just as basic movie making. I don't mean to sound like an old person, but the audio mix for dialogue is insane. Yeah, like you can barely make out what people are saying for good chunks of the movie, and especially during key moments of exposition.
Yeah, I have a theory on this, which is that, because this is a running problem with Christopher Nolan, right? This is something people complain about a lot, to the point where
but I've never agreed with those complaints before now.
Oh, well, no, I mean, I agreed with them in both Interstellar and Dunkirk. I mean, there are things that are, you know, that are mixed together so difficultly that it makes important parts hard to hear. But I have always like been like, it's not that bad. This movie, it's bad. It's really hard to hear certain things, to the point that I literally, like the day after the movie, I ordered the screenplay from Amazon, which is not out yet. I pre-ordered it, so I will be able to actually read the dialogue at some point.
I thought that would be very invaluable. I really did think that.
But my theory on this is that Nolan has some, I'm convinced he has some sort of weird, like either super hearing or some sort of like mutant ears where he like can hear, he can understand what people are saying perfectly no matter what. So like he turns in these muddy mixes and people are like, Chris, we can't hear what they're saying. Fuck, and he's like, no, it's perfect. I can hear it just fine. What's your problem? Either that, or he's doing it deliberately to fuck with people at this point. That's like my other.
That's possible. Big thought. Yeah. I mean, in a movie which is wildly missing an important exposition in some points, it's also a wastrel in other points. Like the Michael Caine scene serves no purpose. That entire, there's no reason for that to be in the movie. You could say 4 minutes.
It's just nice to see him, but that was it.
The action sequences are, so I very much liked the freeway chase, although it was not as good as the freeway chase in Matrix 2. We should just say that. And the final set piece with the mystery army is incomprehensible to watch. You have no idea what is happening. Mm-hmm. And those sorts of movie-making mistakes, I think, are pretty much unforgivable. And that's even before you get to the storytelling. And this thing is a train wreck as a matter of story.
I mean,
we can go to that next.
Mm-hmm. I would disagree in the. I think as I've said, it's incoherent to watch on the screen. The final action set piece, it's incomprehensible. I am very curious to see how it plays second, third, fourth time around, just because I do think that he is doing something very specific. And again, maybe it just doesn't work. Maybe what he is trying to do, his attempt, his like final ultimate attempt to literalize the concept of time and like portray it cinematically by showing time running backward and forward at the same time, maybe that simply can't be done. And I'm very open to that idea that like the thing he wants to do is just impossible. That being said, I was not expecting it, so I don't know that I was watching it correctly. I think you have to be like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's entirely possible that I'm just giving him too much credit here. But
so let me walk you guys through this a little bit. So the idea of entropy and decreasing entropy, moving backwards in time, is something that I first encountered back in, I think it was the early 90s when I read Stephen Hawking's Brief History of Time. And it was one of the things that fascinated me most about the book. And as a mild physics nerd, I've always sort of been interested in that idea. And so proposition that by toying with entropy, you could be moving backwards in time is interesting and not all that exotic. And I did not find it difficult to grasp at all. But the execution of how it was being told and what was really happening was essentially incomprehensible. But here's the point I want to make about this. In Ghostbusters, how does capturing the ghosts work? You have your jump pack and you have your thing. And if you and somebody else both throw your super laser lasso around the ghost, and then somebody else sticks a trap underneath it and then opens the trap, the trap brings the ghost into the thing and the ghost disappears. And the only thing we need to know is that you don't cross the streams, right? The science behind this is totally immaterial. We don't need to know why it works. We don't need to know why the streams can't be crossed. Mm-hmm. We don't need to know why anything. We just need to know how it works. And this is true of Inception as well, right? In Inception, the question of, well, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Hold on. You put all these people, you just give them an IV, and then they're in
and
each
then
other's
they jump
dreams.
From your mind to
how
their mind.
This is, yeah, right. How does this, you know, why does this work? But we don't care. Because we know how it works, right? The rules are very, very well established.
That's right.
And we get all that from the scene where Cobb and Ariadne, who is the stand-in for the audience, do that walk through the dream. And what he's doing is he's layering rule upon rule upon rule, right?
I mean, there's like 50 minutes of exposition in that movie that basically just explains how it works.
Right, but they do so in such a skillful way that by the time they're done, you have a very firm understanding of how this entire world functions, right? So you're never really in doubt about it. You understand why it's important that they're all falling at different rates. You understand what the kick is and the why of it. Like, you know, hold on, why does this work? It's totally immaterial. We don't care at all. Tenet fails at the most basic level of establishing the hows of the universe. And the Ariadne Cobb scene in Tenet takes place like 20 minutes in when John David Washington is with the lady scientist and she hands him the gun and says, here, catch the bullet. And the how of this universe that is given in that 3 minute scene or whatever it is so wildly unequal to the task.
Right. Question.
Yes.
Here is a thought I have had several times after watching this movie. If they were to eliminate, essentially just eliminate that whole scene with the bullets going backwards and him catching the bullet that he's like drawing to himself like Magneto, right? And all you had were people going backwards through time. People, like people traveling backwards against the flow of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would that have solved the problem?
Well, I don't know, because it isn't just the catching of the bullets. It's the entire worldview which she sets up, where she says there are people who are putting, they're planting these objects from the future back. Mm-hmm. And she shows him the boxes of all the future objects. But then we never see that happening again. Nobody ever then talks about the future objects.
That's what I mean.
Well, that's what all the algorithm pieces are. Those are things that are being sent backwards through time.
Is it? And well, but are they being sent backwards, or are they just things that somebody? Here's the other question, which again, you just don't know. Is it the case that people are sending things backwards through time, or is it that people are coming from the future back here and then just leaving things, right? Are those bullets being sent backwards, or is it that somebody has come back and while they're running around backwards, they shoot at somebody and that bullet is then lying around, right? None of it none of it makes sense. What the fuck is the algorithm? What are they going to plug the algorithm into? Right. So the algorithm turns it on and it
has all of the time going backwards then starting from here because of climate change, because they want to stop the climate change. This is like the future.
This is in a weird way a callback to like Doctor Who. If any, Victor, you watch a little bit of Doctor Who.
A little
Who,
bit,
right?
But yeah.
So we, in the Doctor Who mythology, the entire universe
the original
is
Doctor
being
Who
held,
was
being
really,
held up yeah. by a bunch of above guys, monks basically, sitting around doing math on abacuses, and that they are holding the entire time continuum together, and the master is trying to blow them up and blah, 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 blah. And I guess there is something like that happening with the algorithm, but the algorithm is like a series of heavy lead boxes.
He couldn't just call it the MacGuffin. I have another question. Horcruxes. They're Horcruxes.
Who is the real bad guy? Is the real bad guy Sergei or Andre or whatever his name is? Or is he just working for somebody else from the future who we don't know?
By the way, he's working for somebody else from the future. That's why they're sending the gold bars back to him.
By the way, in the first scene where we're in the Ukrainian concert hall, who puts the bombs on the chairs with the people that then John David Washington has to go back? Because it looks to me like John David Washington's team puts the bombs there, and then all of a sudden he's running back in to take them and throw. Like
his team had been infiltrated by Kenneth Branagh's guys, which is why they kidnap him. Because Kenneth Branagh has seen this event happen, he has people who come back and tell him what is going on. So he kidnaps John David Washington.
You cannot at the very instance of the beginning of your movie.
You're looking at this very linearly.
Well, I am.
JBL. Sure.
You should watch this very linearly to the beginning.
So here's the thing. I am positive that Tenet is going to find an insanely vocal minority of people who think it's the greatest thing ever. And they will say something like, well, once you watch it 17,000 times, then you understand that it all actually makes sense.
Right.
Now,
I don't see the problem here.
Somebody who watches Layer Cake like, four or five times a year, I am all into the idea of having pieces of art where your appreciation for it deepens upon multiple viewings, and in multiple viewings, you actually see things you never saw before.
Got nowhere to go but up.
There is a problem with saying that the only way to understand this piece of art is to have experienced it 17,000 times. That just doesn't fly. Like you have to be able to give people a basic understanding of what the story is, even if it is incomplete and will be augmented with multiple viewings.
Question.
Yes.
If Elizabeth Debicki shoots Kenneth Branagh's character, Mm-hmm. Doesn't that solve everything? And yet they don't have to worry about going to war and blowing that, stopping the device from being blown up, whatever that device is. Does that sound-
I don't think so. He has a dead man switch where somehow, like, if he dies, the computer program, which executes itself on an iPhone or something. I don't.
The she algorithm.
Sees herself. She sees herself in this whole thing about, oh, and then she thinks.
Yeah, she sees herself jumping off, right?
Everything about this.
Here's the other thing. I hate it so much. You're not supposed to see each
she's,
other.
She's not. She doesn't need that. She doesn't need the mask because she goes through a turnstile. She goes further back in the past. She goes through the turnstile. So now she's going forward again.
Also,
she's not going backwards through entropy when on that scene on the boat.
Time travel.
And here's another question. Why does John David Washington like her?
Well, why?
Like, this is another, no, like they create this emotional bond between these characters, but it's totally unearned.
Here's
unearned. This is a matter of storytelling, right? I mean,
Vic, what were you going to say? You were going to say something. Yeah.
I thought you're not supposed to look at yourself, otherwise you die.
You can't touch yourself. There's antimatter. Well, that's why he's in that suit that covers him totally.
I see. You can't touch.
I assume there was something earlier in the script where somebody touches somebody and it blows up. That would have been a cool scene. That
would have been a cool scene. But, okay. Well, that answers that question. How is this the nuclear holocaust? He says, is this a nuclear holocaust? And then the scientist says, no, it's worse. Oh, I don't know. Nuclear
he means the movie.
Yeah, what?
He means the movie is worse than nuclear holocaust. Sonny, we're at the hour mark. Can you can you tell me a little bit about what your fan theory about the end is?
Oh yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, yeah, so yeah. So here is one thing that you pick up on after having kids and watching Christopher Nolan movies is that they are all essentially about or at least starting with the kind of counter trilogy that he's doing with the Batman movies, right?
I know what you're going to say.
So it's the Prestige and Inception and Interstellar are all about parents trying to get back to their kids, right? That is like the most basic driving force of those movies. It's about parents trying to get back to their children. What is the thing that this movie ends with, right? It ends with Elizabeth Debicki taking the little kid's hand, right? And there's that whole speech about the bomb that doesn't go off, right? And blah, blah. And this comes shortly after Robert Pattinson's character has sacrificed himself to save John David Washington's character. Here is my big fan theory, and I'm going to be on somebody suggested this in DMs, so I'm totally stealing this from somebody else. But it makes that he is the kid, and that
that's
the
why
whole
he has
thing
the floppy hair.
The whole thing is him essentially setting all this up so John David Washington, so that the protagonist will save his mother from being executed. Boom.
I would love it if
here's the other thing though, is that this is the only standalone Nolan film that is crying out for a sequel, that is literally in the text of the film says this, you've only heard half the story. There's a whole universe of stuff that happens off the screen that needs a story of its own. And what I'm saying is, if we don't get Tenet 2, Electric Boogaloo, Time Travel Boogaloo, I'll be very disappointed.
The whole
$400 million budget, so he could spend more money just to get it right. $500 million budget if he needs it. Warner's, we're counting on you.
You know what? Maybe in the sequel they can put locations on screen, because I wanted to know where we were, and they never told you where you were. Are we in Trieste?
Apparently. Apparently that whole first scene is in the Ukraine and not Russia, like Ukraine. I thought it was.
And they're in Ravello, Italy. I thought, I don't know where I knew they were in the Med, but then sometimes I'm like, is it Tallinn or Trieste? They mentioned both, and I want to know. It's just, where am I?
The whole movie felt like being Sato in Inception, trapped in the lowest dream level where time is infinite and you don't really understand anything that's going on around you. And this, you know, honestly, this is... this was like a film length version of the final 10 minutes of Interstellar, which I think, you know, again, Interstellar movie, which I like many, many things about it, which I really admire its ambition, even though I think it ultimately is a failure. I think it's an incredibly noble and ambitious failure. But the last 10 minutes, once they enter the black hole, is, I think, incomprehensible. I don't think anybody actually knows.
I think
Christopher Nolan.
No, I think that's actually totally wrong. I think it's too comprehensible. I think the problem with that scene again is that Nolan
the
is trying
element
to,
is love.
No, not the love traveling through the universe like gravity. I'm saying the actual literalization of a four-dimensional space as this kind of infinite library. That's what's wrong with that scene, I think, is that it tries to just make literal the idea of time, to like make it physical and finite and concrete and that you can hold it in your hands. And that is, it's, if anything, it's a failure of ambition, or it's a failure of imagination, or it's a failure of some sort. But it's a recurring thing in these movies, in these kind of Nolan experiments with time. I think he's like a weirdly literal conceptualizer of time, and I'm not 100% sure that it works how he wants it to work, certainly, or how it would best work in filmmaking.
I thought you meant the end of Interstellar, where you see the baseball game and it's played in that weird thing, you're like, wait a minute, this is no longer Earth.
No, but everything, like, how does he get out, right? How does he get out of the library? Where is he? Who picks him up? How do they know to pick him up?
He goes through the wormhole. He goes back through the wormhole. He's out. He's back out by Saturn again.
Okay.
He's just going the other way through the wormhole. It's not rocket science. It's just physics.
All right. I've finally exhausted mine. Did you have anything else, boys?
I'm looking through my questions here.
Five stars. Hmm? Five stars.
The name, his henchman, Kenneth Branagh's henchman, I call him Mr. Stamper. That's what I call him. I don't know who.
Oh, he looks that way. Yeah. Can we say something about John David Washington? I really liked him. I thought he was a real movie star.
I like him. And I
love the way he moves on screen. He sort of moves like a boxer.
You mean when he was going forward or backwards?
My big complaint, JBL, with your take on all this is your complaints about the Michael Caine scene, which I think are great. Like, I actually think that is... It's a very funny sequence. The whole comedy of manners, the whole very wry British dry humor of it is very funny.
Subtext of racism at the club.
The very slight subtext of racism, and also, I watching that movie as he says goodbye, Sir Michael. It felt like Christopher Nolan saying goodbye to Michael Caine. Maybe wow. I just had death on the mind because somebody had died recently. But
no,
like,
I think so it's not an accident that he was sitting the whole time.
I'm so glad we didn't mention Michael him Caine by name on this episode.
Michael Caine is. I mean, he's old. He's old, yeah, he's old. You know,
he's old.
Yeah. Okay. I am all for having a cherry on top of comedy if everything else in the story is working.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's a luxury that your movie just can't afford.
All right then. Thank you. Corrections, shout outs.
John David Washington is very good in this. He is also very funny. Like, he's got great comic timing.
He does.
In this movie, like what was the joke? Where'd you go to Mars? Like, literal laugh out loud moment in the notoriously unfunny Christopher Nolan. I hate that critique of his movies. His movies are all very funny. And this one is too.
Not as funny as Midnight Madness, which starred David Naughton. Corrections and shout outs. Just Carl and our friend John Podhoretz, among others, pointed out immediately that the actor and singer from the Dr. Pepper commercial, somebody even sent a link to the YouTube of that great commercial, is David Naughton. And he also recorded a hit single called Making It, which John reminds us is also the name of one of Norman Podhoretz's books. As I told John, Making It still resonates with me today. The song, not the book. Okay. And also a special shout out to listener Tom Morrison, who sent me his latest novel, Torts Are Us. I wrote up this quick little bit here. A legal farce involving twin brothers Pap and Pup Peters, who are class action lawyers. It's down and dirty, and you should buy it right now on Amazon. Thank you, Tom. And that's all the time we're giving to this episode. Really, that's it. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at SunnyBunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in SubBeacon under podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time. I got
wait, hold on. Let me do that backwards.
Thank you, Sonny. And then he disappears again. You people are really missing out. The visuals of this episode are really great. I have something, but I'll wait if you guys have something or I can go first.
No, Victorino, please go.
I just want your reactions to this. First of all, I'm not going to ask JVL because I already know the answer. Sonny, you're not one of these people who back in the day would go to a bar and then you'd use the bathroom, but you would bring your beer with you to the bathroom and then put the beer on top of the urinal. You ever see guys who used to do that, who did that?
Go to a bar? Who would go to a bar? Oh, I'm sorry.
Not that part, JVL.
I mean, it would depend on how drunk I was and where, if I'm at a place, but there's a difference. What if there's a difference between being at a bar where you're like sitting at a table and everybody's just, you know, or even sitting at the bar, you can like put the napkin. But if you're at a mixer or something where you're just walking around and talking to people, you're just hanging out. What are you supposed to do with your drink? You take it into the bathroom with you. You
hold
it
in one molecules.
You hold beer in one hand.
First of all,
that's what you're supposed to do. You throw it away. You go to the bathroom. You wash your hands, and then you buy a new
one. No. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Uncle Pennybags. I'm sorry, Richie Rich. You can just throw money
Sonny,
away on
you
half
do, if you're in that
drinks.
Situation, you chug. Okay, you chug, and then you go to the bathroom. I'm not even an expert in this, but I will say those molecules, fluid dynamics, it's going in the beer. Okay, that's the first thing. So I was at the Tyson's. And the IMAX, right? And before that, I said, better use the bathroom because, you know, this is 2.5 hours. So I go in the bathroom, and right there at the sink, teetering on the sink, is a gigantic bucket of popcorn, you know, overflowing, and a large drink on the edge of the sink. An old man was peeing, and he put all this stuff on the sink
while he survived all this. He survived all this. He can survive.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
too.
I said, buddy, why even wear the mask at this point? Just why even wear the mask?
JBL, inquiring minds want to know, did you have any thoughts about the watches in Tenet?
So this is the second time that Nolan has done a partnership with the American brand, but Swiss made Hamilton watches. And it is the second time that it has left me totally cold. So there was a watch in the Murph that was used in Interstellar. This is the Arctic sub, the real Arctic sub that Hamilton makes does not have the digital component across the side of it. I mean, this is a sweet spot for me, obviously. Watches and Christopher Nolan, you would think. And so again, like the movie, converging I wanted interest. To love
it's
it.
It's a temporal pincer movement on JBL's interests.
And it left me absolutely cold. Maybe you did not notice. They are not wearing the Hamilton watches until the end, though. And prior to that, I can't tell what they're wearing, but it looks like they are wearing the Rolex Submariner No Date prior to that. But I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I was sitting like a normal human being in the very last row of the IMAX, so there could be nobody behind me breathing on me.
In the corner or in the middle?
Middle, because the way our AMC was going is they blocked out the seats depending on where you sat. The seats were not pre-blocked out, and so I chose my seat. I was the first person to choose a seat in this theater.
That's so funny.
And so
that's,
I got that, the dead center back row.
That's the same seat I sat in for 50 Shades Freed.
It was very sticky.
Do you want to talk a little bit? Just we're at an hour.
What are you doing? This is.
I have one more. I've been given three. I'm sure it's fine outs already. But I just have one more question. How was the actual theater experience? We didn't talk about that at all, JBL.
For me, I was a little freaked out by the idea that there were 9 people and only 3 of us had a mask on at any point during the movie. The other 6 each had a popcorn. And so evidently purchasing a popcorn is a get out of jail free card for having to wear your mask at all.
But you have to.
So it seems like it's kind of a loophole. No, these people were not eating the entire time. It's a 2.5 hour movie. This is, it's not a 32 gallon bag of popcorn, but once you've bought your popcorn, you no longer need to wear your mask at all.
Vic, did you wear your mask? throughout?
I did, because I had no, I'm not going to eat, you know, at the theater or drink, because then I'd have to leave, you know, so I did it. Although I had some popcorn in the bathroom.
Oh, I'm sure it's fine. Oh.